Do you eat, sleep, and breathe golf? Do you love to explore? And most importantly, do you just want to have some fun? Well, then welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren, sponsored by Tobacco Road Golf and Travel. Now here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence, and the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
Welcome once again to Talking Golf Getaways. I'm Mitch Lawrence in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Darren Bunch out there in California. It is Masters time, and just saying those words makes me happy, makes me kind of glow inside. I know Darren feels the same way out in California, possibly for different reasons, but I know we both love Masters Week, and we are thrilled to be joined by our friend, our partner on Golf News Net, Ryan Ballingy. Will join us in a second to talk the Masters, to talk Augusta, to talk his experiences covering the major, and we certainly look forward to that. Darren, I know you and I talk to Ryan a lot, but whenever we get a chance to really kind of go a little deeper into his own experiences covering the game, I think we're both pretty excited.
We have a blast talking with Ryan. Obviously, he is our partner in crime at golfnewsnet.com. He is golfnewsnet.com, I guess is the way I should say that. And we're just looking forward to talking about the Masters today and more of our Masters Week content, which has been a pretty good week so far. We had Cameron Wiebe from Champions Retreat on. We had John Patrick from the great Augusta Golf Show. And now Ryan today to kind of wrap up this little mini week that we're doing rolling into the Masters, which will be tomorrow when this airs.
Okay, and don't forget the great Ron Green Jr. of Global Golf Post, who will also join us in this little group talking about the Masters. We look forward to that as well. But before we get to Ryan, we're glad you found us. Darren mentioned it, golfnewsnet.com, iTunes podcasts, Audio Boom, Stitcher is where you can find us. Darren on social media, at Getaways Golf on Twitter, at Golf Getaways on Instagram, me on both, at Mitch Lawrence, L-A-U-R-A-N-C-E. And before we get to Ryan and the Masters and Augusta, let's switch just a little bit down the road, Darren, and give thanks to our great sponsor, Tobacco Road.
Oh, we are talking the South this week for Masters Week, but we also love the South for the Pinehurst area, Tobacco Road Golf and Travel. I'm getting ready to take an epic trip where we're going to play 36 a day at Tobacco Road. We love the Mike Stranz course there. We're also going to play Pinehurst number 2. We're going to play Pinehurst number 8. We've got Mid Pines. We've got Southern Pines. You name it. And you can do all of that and put together an unforgettable trip with Tobacco Road Golf and Travel.
And you can find them at tobaccoroadtravel.com. There's 20 courses available. Great service, affordable pricing. You can book your next great golf getaway when?
Today.
Today is exactly right. All right, Ryan Ballingy, a writer, a broadcaster for more than a decade, NBC Sports, Golf Channel, so much more. He's covered numerous PGA Tour events, a lot of majors. And of course, as we said, we're pretty partial and prejudiced because he is the founder and CEO of Golf News Net, our partner, golfnewsnet.com. On Twitter, at Golf News Net, or you can find out what Ryan's thinking on Twitter, at Ryan Ballingy, B-A-L-L-E-N-G-E-E. I kind of like saying it that way. It's got a little bit of a flow and a rhythm, doesn't it, Ryan?
It does. Usually when I tell people my last name, I start with B as in boy, and that's just something my father has done and has always done, and so I picked it up, and now my wife's picked it up, and I'm sure someday my kids will pick it up, and it doesn't really have the same ring to it as double L, double E, but I like that better.
Okay, at Ryan, R is in rodeo, Y is in... Wait,
why? By the end of this podcast, we will have spelled my name.
I think that should be what we go for. We'll just throw it in occasionally. We'll pick a letter and throw it in. We're glad to have you with us, obviously. Golf is what we love. Golf travel is what we love. Augusta is a place everyone is familiar with. So Darren and I thought it'd be great to talk to you. You've been covering the Masters for a while. Before we go back to the actual coverage, I want to know, what's your first memory of watching Augusta on TV? Go back a little ways and try to remember the first time you saw it, what your impressions were. Did you ever think you'd get there?
I didn't really think about golf on my radar until I was probably 11 or 12 years old. And that was when I really started playing. My uncle was really into the game at the time. Now, somewhat ironically, he can't play because of his back. And now I'm more into the game than him. But At the time I was playing three other sports and golf wasn't even on my radar all that much. I would go and hit golf balls on the driving range as a side activity when I would go to the batting cages. And over time I realized I was better at hitting golf balls than baseball. And so it was around that time when I started to get really interested in golf, playing it, so therefore watching it. And so my first memory is kind of vaguely watching Ben Crenshaw win the 95 Masters and not really understanding why he was crying into his hands when he had made the final putt. I mean, I didn't know the first thing about Harvey Pinnock. And then, of course, 2 years later, when Tiger won the Masters, and just golf went berserk. I mean, the overnight, kids in my class, you know, I was in eighth grade at the time, they knew about golf. They cared about golf in a way that they never probably otherwise did, and probably, frankly, didn't since. And I can just remember so vividly how big that Nike red sweater looked on Tiger as he made the putt on the 72nd hole to lock up the win, and, you know, the win for the ages call from Jim Nantz and the hug to Earl Woods. I think that stuck with me the most, how he hugged his dad and what it meant to him. That what it seemed like at the time was the culmination of a life's work to that point, when really he was just getting started.
I'm gonna try to sidestep the fact that you were in eighth grade when Tiger won the Masters. Is that what you said?
Eighth grade, yeah.
Really?
Good God.
Really? I'm hanging up now, Ryan.
Now, here's the funny thing. When Nike came out with the I Am Tiger Woods campaign, I forget what year that was. I think that was after Tiger had won the Masters. But I was a huge Phil Mickelson fan at the time. So I actually made a shirt on my computer and did the iron-on stuff that was a mockery of that, was I Am Phil Mickelson, and wore it because he was the lovable loser. And people loved that shirt. I wish I still had it. I wish I still had both shirts, but I gave both away.
You can make another one now, you know.
Yeah, I guess I could, right? And
yeah,
probably sell them online for $30 a pop. Yeah,
there you go. Maybe, well, that's something we could. After this podcast, I think, is when you should sell them, when people become incredibly aware.
Yeah, I'll sell them for as long as Tiger Woods' people let me use his name and make money off of it.
You can sell them on the all-new golfnewsnet.com/store website.
We actually have a store. We actually have some t-shirts that we sell, but or maybe it could be I Am Wiger Tuds, and that way maybe they won't sue me.
I like it. All right, so we know your first time you kind of got into it that way. What was the first time you went to Augusta? You actually went on the grounds?
2010 was the first year I got into the Golf Writers Association. And that was seemingly a big deal at the time, because they weren't letting a lot of bloggers or blogger type people in. And I had just started with Waggle Room to the Point. That was the SB Nation's old golf blog, where we had a substantial audience, and I went to enough tournaments per year. And it was this long, drawn out conversation with Doug Ferguson of the AP about why I could be a member, why I'm actually a reporter, and all this stuff. And the big perk, as you know, is getting to go on Wednesday for the annual meeting, which is at Augusta National, and you get a pass for Wednesday to go see the par 3 contest and all the stuff on the grounds. And that was just the coolest thing. So it was 2010, the first time I went, and then I covered the tournament in 2011 for NBC Sports.
And talk about just the golf course itself. When you walked onto the golf course, and, you know, what were your initial impressions of just seeing the course after watching it on TV for a few years?
I mean, at first you're kind of like gawking. You're like, and that's where Tiger made that chip, and that's where Larry Mize made that chip, and that's where that happened. It's like there are all these points that you recognize from television, and then you orient yourself toward them because now you're at ground level. You're not watching from cameras on above or anything like that. You can actually kind of put that into perspective yourself. And the other thing I think most people would immediately notice is how undulating the property is and how much change there is in elevation especially from 10T down to the green. And then you kind of get through Amen Corner and kind of the flatter part of the golf course on 13 and 14 before you start to kind of come back up the hill for the second nine. I don't think TV does a good job of showing that, and I don't know how you would do a better job of it. But that was the most outrageous part to me, was just how much undulation and elevation change there was, because it just seemed on television like a fairly standard flat golf course. And then once you get there, you realize there's no such thing as a flat lie there.
Isn't that amazing? We've heard that from a number of people. I felt the same way. I know a lot of people feel that way. Darren can't feel that way because he hasn't been there yet. But we keep trying to rub it in each other where we have and haven't been. I remember talking to Jim Huber, who was the great, now late, TBS broadcaster, who was a really good friend. And he said to me at one point that they will never have, no matter how good the technology is on television, there will never be good enough technology to give spectators at home what the real Augusta National is like, which before I went, I thought was kind of a bold statement. But once I got there, I understood what he was talking about.
Yeah, I mean, that just blew me away. And obviously, the other part is how green everything is. I mean, you've seen green. You know what green looks like. But you haven't seen that kind of smattering of green in one place everywhere. I mean, it's just beautiful. I mean, I don't know what their water bill is, and I don't want to know, but it's ridiculously green, and everything looks perfect. There's nothing that's out of place. It's like Disney World, where everything seems choreographed perfectly, and it runs on a daily schedule, and it just so happens there are X number of golfers that are invited to compete there for 4 days, but whether they were there or not, the place would still look the same. Like, it would still work the same way. It's that meticulously managed.
It's funny. Mitch is chuckling because we had John Patrick on the show, and three things he said. He said it's like Disneyland. He also said it's greener than you can ever imagine watching it on TV, and it's hillier than you can ever imagine watching it on TV. So clearly everybody's on the same page about, you know, that is just the magnificence of this venue, and how different it is if you actually get to stand there and watch it in person, which, you know, obviously so many golfers have on their bucket list. Are you a fan of the pimento cheese sandwich?
The two times I've been, the first time I went, I had to walk the golf course, maybe the first nine holes or something like that, took some pictures and things like that. And then I went over toward, I want to say it was right around 14T, and had some food. And I went and just took every sandwich. Just, I mean, they're $1.50 or $2. Like, just give me them all. Just give me one of every sandwich and a beer, and I'm going to see how good these things are. And the pimento cheese was very good. I've had better pimento cheese spreads, but the overall sandwich is really good with the white bread, the Wonder style bread. But I like the chicken sandwich a little bit more than the pimento cheese. I put that above because it's very similar in nature to a Chick-fil-A sandwich. And if you're getting a Chick-fil-A sandwich for like $2, just back up the truck.
You know what? It's heresy. You just committed heresy. You may lose your credential now, you know.
I've become a big fan over the years of a grilled pimento cheese.
Ooh.
Where you make the grilled cheese sandwich and the cheese that you're grilling is pimento spread.
Ooh.
And you got to do it a little bit longer than a regular grilled cheese because kind of the mix is weird, but it's so good. I mean, the toast is better than the Wonder Bread. So if I were starting over at Augusta National or trying to like artesian up their cuisine, that would be what I would do to it.
All right. How about, here's my last food question. Darren probably has more, but this is my last one. Because the revelation to me, after the first time I went when I tried the pimento cheese and whatever, the second time I went, I sampled the other kind of bizarre offerings. But the revelation to me were the moon pies, the Master's moon pies.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and they're extremely good. Really good. The desserts are good. I mean, everything is, they're simple, they're classic, and they're well executed. And that's really all you want. I mean, I don't want fusion cuisine at a major championship. I mean, when I play golf, the most outrageous thing I would eat, like, is a hot dog with relish. Maybe it gets on my shirt. So I don't want something really nice and well, you know, complicated. But they do good food, cheap, and they don't gouge you. I mean, it's not $9 a beer. They don't tell you what the beer is. I think it's Bud Light, but whatever the beer is, it's like $3, and the import is $4. Oh, okay. But you're also expected not to get hammered at Augusta National, or they throw you out. So they kind of like tease you with the cheap beer that you could really go overboard with, but they know you won't because you're afraid to get kicked out.
See, I've never been a fan of the pimento cheese in any setting, but now you guys have hooked me with the moon pies. I mean, are we talking about homemade moon pies here?
Well, no, they're branded Masters moon pies, but seeing the Masters wrapper, and they're small. They're not those giant ones. They're just kind of small, like this is what Ryan said. They're simple, they're classic, and they're well executed, which may be my favorite Masters-related description of anything.
Because, so I can eat 7 or 8 of them.
That's way too low.
Yeah.
That's way too low.
You could go into the dozen range. I mean, just if you ever like think of like Little Debbie packages of like 12 things, that it's kind of like that size of moon pie where you're like, yeah, I could polish this off this box right here and wouldn't feel all that guilty about it.
Ryan, this is a guy that could eat 4 yum yums at St. Andrews in one sitting. So I'm thinking easy a dozen moon pies.
Yeah, this is all very relative, but for the media, the tempting thing is, you know, they have media dining in a lot of tournaments, the major championships. They have like big tents, and they're going to change it this year with the new press building. I don't know what that's going to look like, but the times that I had gone in the back of kind of this amphitheater style seating for the media, they have a full kitchen where they have all of the Masters food there all day. So you, all right, I'm hungry. I'm going to stroll up and go up the steps and go get a pimento cheese and grab a soda. Or the egg salad is also very underrated. Get an egg salad and just chomp down for 30 minutes and go back to work. You have no excuse to actually go on the golf course because the food that you want is there. They've got it, huge screens. They've got a wired internet connection, so there's no failing. It's perfect. It's a great setup for media.
You've covered many majors, Ryan. What's different about the Masters?
In one sense, it's fear. I mean, I mean this in a polite way, but Augusta National is not you're working on their terms. You are an invited guest to Augusta National, and they expect a certain decorum from everybody, the players, the patrons, the members, and the media. And if you violate that, then you're done. You're going not literally to jail, but you're going to media jail. I mean, they did it to Charlie Reimer a few years ago on Golf Channel when I was at the tournament covering it. He brought his cell phone out onto the golf course, which is a no-no. You can't do that. You can't even bring it out of the press building. You need, if you want to record something, you need an actual recorder, like the old school, and you got to bring that. And if you don't, if you're caught with your phone, either it buzzes or it rings, you're done. There's no like, oh, hey, don't do that again. It's like, no, goodbye. We'll see you next year, maybe, if you're lucky, and we'll talk to you about it later. So there's that sense of fear. Like, you kind of got to play within their rules, but at the same time, they give you really cool access to parts of the property that the general public doesn't necessarily get to do. And I asked Scott Michaud from the Augusta Chronicle, because obviously he's there every year, multiple times, not just for the Masters. What should I do while I'm here? Like, what's the one cool thing that I should do while I'm here other than max out my credit card or merch? And he said, go have lunch in the clubhouse. I said, we can do that? He said, yeah, just roll into the clubhouse, get a seat, and order some food. And they'll serve you. And sure enough, I went up to the second floor, got a spot right out on the deck. There were a couple of former contestants out there having lunch. I had lunch by myself, had a great soup, had a great sandwich. And I was right under the old oak tree. I could see basically every golf luminary that wasn't competing, talking to each other under the old oak tree. It was one of the coolest things. Saw some guys tee off while sitting up there. Obviously, you don't have that really at a U.S. Open. I mean, in some cases, you have access to the clubhouse, but I don't care about the clubhouse at Congressional. I don't care about the clubhouse at Erin Hills. No U.S. Open venue except maybe Pebble Beach. Do I care about the clubhouse? But I did at Augusta National. So there's kind of this weird symbiosis. Like we expect you to act a certain way, but if you do that, we'll treat you really well. And I thought that was a really intriguing part about covering the Masters, is that you don't get the same access. You can't go inside the ropes. There's no ropes passes. Every media person is outside the ropes. If you are working media, there are certain spots where you can kind of sit down where no one else can. But you are basically a patron with a pad and paper and a permanent seat in the media center. Other than that, you're not really any different than anyone else. So it's a little awkward.
Well, I love that part about lunch in the clubhouse and stuff. And that area by the old oak tree is, whether you're inside there having lunch or just standing around, it's a perfect spot to be because of the people that wander by. And you're always kind of on the lookout for somebody that you've always wanted to say hi to, whose work you admire. That's definitely happened before, too. The ones you've covered, you say you've been there twice?
Yep.
Which were they, and what happened while you were there that kind of made it special about actually being there while those two particular ones were going on?
So the moment of the two that stood out for me was 2011. So Tiger had made a run on Sunday. He went out fairly early, was well off the pace when it started. And this is going to be a little bit of a long story, but the payoff is worth it. So Tiger is starting to make his run, and he heads up to the eighth tee. So he's with Steve Williams at the time. They part ways. Steve stands at basically the crosswalk just before you start to go up the hill, up the eighth hole. Tiger goes to the tee to tee off. There are a bunch of fans who obviously know who Steve Williams is, and they kind of come over, and they start talking with him. And one guy says to him, it was a kid probably 20, 21, 22 years old. And he says, "Hey, Steve, can I have Tiger's ball?" And Steve doesn't even really acknowledge the guy. Like, he kind of looks at him and kind of chuckles a little bit to himself, but not like, "Haha, that's funny." More like, "Yeah, fat chance." And the kid thinks Steve doesn't hear him. He goes, "Steve, can I have Tiger's ball?" And again, Steve's like, not responding. And the kid asks a third time, "Can I have Tiger's ball, Stevie?" And Williams finally turns to him and says, "It starts with a P and ends with an E." And the kid's thinking about it. And Stevie says again, "It starts with a P and it ends with an E." The kid thinks, and he says, "Pussy?" And this got Steve Williams. Like, he's now laughing. He's like, "No, please. Can you say please?" And everyone around is laughing. And the kid's like, he's doubled over too. And he goes, "Please, Stevie, may I have Tiger's ball?" And he gives them the ball, and they go along their way. And that, for me, I'd always heard Steve Williams was kind of this monster guy who was really kind of a jerk. But in that moment, that humanized him. And then later on in the hole, you know, I'm following Tiger, and I see his press guy, Glenn Greenspan. And Mark Steinberg's there, and they're all there. They realize this rally is going on, so they're obviously there anyway. And Glenn used to be the press guy at Augusta National, and Tiger hired him away. And we had spoken a number of times over email and phone when the whole Tiger thing happened, you know? So we knew each other at least familiarly, so I go and introduce myself while we're standing around, and Tiger gets one and two, and he has this eagle putt. And he makes the eagle putt. So at that point, I think he was tied for the lead through eight holes, which was like, holy crap, this could happen. And Glenn's reaction was to turn to me and high-five me, which felt really awkward because I'm the press and you really shouldn't be high-fiving me right now. But it was really kind of cool to see Team Tiger get excited about their guy after all that he had has accomplished in his career, that they still got jazz for those big moments like that. Obviously didn't win. Then we had McIlroy's meltdown, right? So McIlroy looks cruising. I was like, all right, this is over. Let's go measure the jacket. And obviously all that stuff starts to unfold and you're trying to get quotes and things. And the thing I really remember is when McIlroy formally lost, he finished the round. His girlfriend at the time, Holly Sweeney, kind of comes up to him, and the C's kind of part for him to walk into the locker room. And just the kind of awkward silence, like people wanted to be encouraging of him that he'll come back and get another one, which he hasn't yet, but he could. And just that look on his face of, man, I really blew this one. That one stuck with me.
So you had the Stevie Williams, please, let's call it the please story. and you had the Rory meltdown all in the same. That's a pretty cool event.
And then you're standing there behind 18, they have the little shack for the scores. They also have a little monitor for people to watch that are media waiting for guys who are coming off the green, want to give some quick quotes. And I mean, no one thought Charles Schwartzel was going to win. No one. And we figured, all right, well, Jason Day and Adam Scott are playing together. It's destiny. The Aussie curse is going to break. Here it goes. And then here comes this dude, Charles Schwartzel, birdieing the last four holes to win, which no one seems to give him a whole lot of credit for. Everyone talks about Arnold Palmer birdieing the final two holes to win and then O'Meara doing it in 98. But Schwartzel birdied the last four holes to win the golf tournament. And everyone's kind of like, all right, let's rip up the game, or it's not Rory winning, it's not Tiger winning, it's not an Aussie winning, it's that guy.
Yeah.
There you go. So sometimes the Masters doesn't turn out how you think.
That's funny, man. You mentioned the merchandise and maxing out your credit card. What Augusta swag do you have?
Now, I'm not a big spender. And I just am not. I'm more of a, I spend my mental capital on remembering experiences than having stuff that I'll probably eventually get too fat to wear anyway. So I have two Augusta National shirts. I have a polo shirt and I have a t-shirt. I have a couple of hats, and that's really it. I mean, I have a yardage book. I didn't buy that. That was given to me. I have my media guide, my media guides, I should say, that I've marked up over the years with changes since I've been there. And that's probably the thing I hold on to most is that, because I won't outwear that. Like, I can have that on my bookshelf forever, and the pictures that I've taken while there. I have a couple hung up around my office too.
Is there anything you wish you had gotten when you were there before that you might get when you go back?
I don't know. No, I mean, maybe like a putter cover or something like that. But I'm not that kind of, I don't like to be particularly gaudy about the places I've been or the things I've accomplished. So I kind of try to leave that to myself. And if I did it, it would probably be something that most people would know. It wouldn't be something I would show off, I guess. Maybe like a Christmas ornament, something like that. Because my wife and I like to get an ornament each year from some place we go together. So maybe that would be a good one.
So you don't walk around with your Pulitzer Prize.
My imaginary Pulitzer Prize. Yeah. Blogger of the year.
Just wondering. Before we leave Augusta, because a lot of people think, okay, well, I'm not going to get on Augusta. We asked you, Darren and I asked you, whether you had actually played the National, and your response was?
I've not yet. There is for people who may have not heard yet, there is a media lottery that they run each year, and the winners, I think it's 16 or 20 people, I forget what the number is, get to play Augusta National the Monday after for the member tees, and you're treated like a member for a day. I've not won that yet. I'm 0-2, but the last year I'd gone, someone had won that had been entering for like 20 years. So I was like, maybe I got to wait a little while for this.
So you're saying there's still a chance?
There's still a chance. Now, I won the media lottery, and there were fewer slots to play Oakmont the Monday after the U.S. Open last year. So I'm hoping maybe that luck will spill over to the next time I'm at the Masters.
All right, well, then you're definitely going to get in. In closing, courses around Augusta. Now, you live in the Baltimore, Washington area. Have you played any of the other tracks around Augusta? People who maybe want to go to Augusta but know they can't play the National, but are there any others that you've played that you like and might recommend?
No, the times I've been, I stayed in an Econo Lodge with a hot tub in the room, not the bathroom. So I didn't necessarily have the money to pull off a good round during Masters week. But now that I'm a little older, People have always told me go to Champions Retreat. They've got a great, not only golf offering, but they also have another great overall offering from the kind of party atmosphere they have. Augusta Country Club, I've heard, is also really good. And those are kind of the two I've heard about. I know that there's a municipal course in town. I forget what the slang name is for it. Like the Yard or something like that, that is reasonably cheap even during Masters Week. But obviously you're paying like a jacked up $60 to play a course. It's normally like 15. So if I were going to go all in, I would probably do Champions, and just stay there the whole week and play. But then again, I probably wouldn't get much coverage of the tournament in. So when I cover majors, usually I get one round in somewhere. Fortunately, a couple years ago at the PGA, I played Erin Hills, so I have a sense of what that course will be like for the U.S. Open this year. Kind of did that on purpose. And I normally don't bring the sticks when I go to cover a tournament. It's weird. You put in the 12 and 14 hour days, and really all I want at the end of a day is for it to be over and to drink a lot of beer.
And to be in a hot tub in your room at an Econo Lodge, clearly.
Yeah, I mean, and there was carpet. There was carpet right outside the hot tub. Like, why? It should have been hardwood or laminate or something. I mean, no, they didn't think that out, but they did have a nice breakfast.
I can't tell you how many hotel rooms I've been in that have that exact setup that you just described. You act like it's something out of the ordinary, but I can name probably five other hotels I've been in that have the exact same hot tub in the room surrounded by carpet.
What? Why? Was that a thing in the 80s? We got to keep them now. Like, rip them out. Like, something. I'm very frustrated. I was very frustrated by that room, not only because I was too tired to use the hot tub, because I didn't want to wait to fill it up every night. But it didn't make any sense. It just did not.
See, I never thought when we came up with talking about the Masters that it would turn into a discussion of the hot tub at the Econo Lodge. Somehow, I don't know. I guess the twists and turns of talking golf getaways have gotten us again.
It's just one of the many things in this podcast that is going to cost Ryan his credentials.
Well, hopefully... Hopefully, if Augusta National is listening, they heard the part where it's very well executed and very lovely, and we respect their roles and traditions and all of that stuff. It's really the Econo Lodge slam is more on the Econo Lodge. Yeah. Honestly, I never get to really experience actual downtown Augusta, Georgia. And the times I've gone, I knew the former mayor, Dee Copenhaver, through a friend, and tried to get together with him a couple of times. He's down in that part of town, and obviously being the mayor while the Masters was going on, and just never got to experience it. But I would like to go back and do that part of town, because you're not really that close to it when you're at Augusta National.
But it's great. I actually have spent a bunch of time down there. Frank Christian, the great Masters and Augusta photographer, his whole family, that's a whole other show, but his whole family were the official photographers from the beginning of Augusta National. And he has a great little place down in the middle of downtown where you can go in and look at all his work. So sometime maybe we can do that together, Ryan. That would be a blast.
I would happily go down to Augusta, and not even like during Masters Week, just to go see Augusta and kind of what the town is like 51 other weeks of the year.
Okay, I'll make that happen. I promise. Darren, unfortunately, is out in California, so he won't be able to join us, but I will make that happen. We're glad to have you with us, obviously, and thrilled to be a part of the Golf News Net team, and we're looking forward to a whole lot of majors and a whole lot more travel and talking to you about all kinds of stuff. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me. You guys are running an awesome show, and I can't wait to hear more about your adventures, because I am super jealous that I do not get to go on them, because I'm a parent of two children under four, so that's kind of out of the cards for a little while, but I can live vicariously through you guys.
Well, that's our goal. That's our goal. Of course, you can find Ryan and us, Golf News Net. You can find it golfnewsnet.com. At Golf News Net, or Ryan Ballingy on Twitter. That's RYAN. B as in boy, ALLENGEE on Twitter. Darren, obviously, great times. Thanks to you.
Yes, and always, or as always, thanks to the listeners. Couldn't do it without them. So hit us up on Twitter at Golf Getaways. No, at Getaways Golf. Or at Mitch Lawrence. Oh,
Jesus, you're drunk. You are drunk.
Full disclosure. I've drank a little bit of the Journeyman Distillery bourbon during today's recordings, and let's try that all again.
Yeah.
Hit us up on the Twitters, Darren at Getaways Golf. Now I can't even read. Mitch at Mitch Lawrence, or use hashtag Talking Golf Getaways, hashtag Emergency 9, or hashtag 2 Haggis Bags to get our attention, or in this case, hashtag 2 Bourbon Bags is what I feel like right now.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, yes, yes. Luckily, you don't have to be reading a speech in front of the United Nations right now. It's just us. Thanks for being with us. Share us with your friends on social media. All we care about, really, is spreading the word about the best in golf travel. We're glad you've been with us. Have a great time watching the Masters. We will talk to you soon. Okay, Tom Petty, I think it's pretty sure that it's time to run down the dream. Take it away. So long, everybody.